Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and it is now or never. We're losing time, folks. The grains of sand in that hourglass are getting low. So when it's all done, that's the ultimate time of reckoning, when it's all done. And so only you and only I can answer for myself, and only you can answer for yourself. And so what we have an opportunity to do is we have an opportunity to really make the most. As a matter of fact, I remember this old saying, or maybe it was a joke or a punchline in a movie. And as a matter of fact, maybe it was Everybody Loves Raymond or something like that. It was about grandparents, and somebody, maybe Raymond or whoever it was that said this, made this comment. The only reason, because they made a comment that their parents, as grandparents, telling their children, the only reason they're nice to you is they're trying to make up for what they did so they can get into heaven. Because, you know, apparently they were bad parents to them. Anyway, it was comedy. But there's some truth to even some comedy that, you know, when people start getting older, they start realizing, you know, the magnitude of very specific things. I, you know, one of the things I'm very, you know, forward with in telling people, you know, you don't have to thank me, you know. And as a matter of fact, there's times when I, when somebody comes along, or when I go to somebody and I help them, and as I help people, I know that, you know, it's natural and it's good and it's actually polite to say thank you very much for doing this. You know, and so forth. But flattery and going overboard is that there's always this thin line, and I always have a problem with that. So most people that kind of know me are a little sensitive to that. But let's be clear. When somebody comes to you and they offer to help, and it's something that they could do for you, you know, sometimes we have to really be honest. And I'll give you a good case in point, because there's different ways of helping people that sometimes it's really good, and then sometimes it's not. I had a friend who was paraplegic. He was in great guy. He was an engineer, and he was in a football accident or injury when he was a young kid in college and lost the use of his legs. So he was permanently, you know, stuck in a wheelchair. I mean, he had a lot of other normal functions, but he just couldn't use his legs. And so the problem is that when people come along, you know, I noticed that there were people that were wheeling him around through work, because I worked with the guy. And, you know, I told him, I said, you know, at any point in time, whenever you need help, I'll be glad to get out of my chair, come over to your cube, or, you know, go to the conference room or what have you, and help you. But my fear is my helping you is not necessarily helping you. I mean, and what I mean by that is, you know, a person in that capacity, in that state, if we help them too much, they get to a point where they don't develop, or they lose the development and the muscles they need to just get around. Because with him getting around, if you're really active and you're getting around, then you're building the strength and your stamina and endurance to be able to, you know, do those things. And the more people do for you, the less, you know, energy, exercise, those types of things, and your muscles will become lethargic. And so I told him, I said, I don't want to be one, you know, that doesn't care. I do. I absolutely. And I'm here for you. And I, you know, called him by name. But I said, if at any point in time you believe that, you know, it's costing you because you may have a harder time at home getting around and becoming more independent and more dependent on others. And I go, sacrificing one's autonomy and independence is a huge sacrifice. And the guy looked at me and he goes, you know what? I never looked at it that way. And he goes, as I'm getting older, I've noticed that I have. And he says, I need to stop asking people to help me because they're not going to be with me when I have to go to the store, when I have to go other places, and it's going to get harder and I may have to actually get full-time support. And I don't want to have to do that, nor do I, you know, want to have to, you know, be in a position where I can't afford it and it even hurts me more. And he goes, you know, so having sometimes these kind of conversations help. But what's important, folks, is that when you have an opportunity to help somebody, or when somebody has an opportunity to help you, allow them to do that. Because I believe that when somebody does something compassionate for somebody else, then they have an opportunity to receive blessings. And if you don't let them do that, or you don't accept what they've done, then you've basically denied them their blessings. And that becomes your burden that, you know, you have to carry. And why? I mean, why make more problems for ourselves for that day of reckoning? We need to be more compassionate. We need to be more accepting and more, you know, giving, especially, you know, when it comes to those, you know, important things, you know, humanity things. Even though we actually have hardcore enemies, because I tell you that the people that are on the dark side of liberty, there are enemies. But when they are, you know, in a situation where, you know, they need some dignity, they need some help, they need a hand up, we need to understand that we're still all from the same creator. We're all, you know, in his creation. And there's no doubt in my mind, we all know what he wants us to do, or at least we should. And if you don't, then read the scriptures and pray about it. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm telling you what you can do. And so today, I want to make up for some of the things I didn't get to cover yesterday. Because in having a conversation just last night with a person that had gone through the process of becoming an inhabitant. In other words, I call them an inhabitant, but they call themselves a sovereign citizen. Well, there's no doubt in my mind, regardless of what your status is, I mean, watch Braveheart. Clearly, these people were fighting for their liberty, and they were acting sovereign because they were making their own decisions to take a stand. And, you know, that point in time when Mel Gibson is laying on the guillotine and he's yelling, freedom, and, you know, and then off with his head. We have the liberty to do what we can. If we actually allow ourselves to do something from compulsion and it's the wrong thing, then who has to answer for that? Even though we may be herded, and even though we may be going down this path that, you know, we don't have a lot of controls, we still have the ultimate control. We are sovereigns. There's nobody that's taken that away from you, as long as you have that agency. The problem is when you actually give up your birthright. You know, like I've said before, with Christianity, when you've given up your birthright in Christendom, then, you know, how do you get that back? There's, you know, and while you're alive on this earth, there are certain things that you can repent for, but there are some things you can't. And this show is not about individual salvation. This show is all about liberty and helping everybody live in a world and develop and thrive in a society that is one based on individual liberty and individual sovereignty, which our Constitution makes this all possible. There's just no doubt in my mind that this is the only place in the world where you have this level of liberty. Even though we've lost so much more, there are still people that have it far worse that would die trying to come here. And so, but they don't understand what these things are, what it takes, you know, and the paradigms that even have been lost to most people in America, which is why most people, they don't have a problem with government usurping more power. Hey, you know, it's going to pay me more money. Look, yeah, let me go down this path. Let me file for that. And that's how they get you. So what I wanted to do was I kind of wanted to talk about, you know, these decisions that ultimately you have to make. And then clearly there are these different tangents and different organizations. There's the General Assembly. There's the Assembly, the Anna von Ritz Assemblies and those types of things. There's these, you know, the sovereign citizen movement itself. There are people that are out there trying to get you to go down these paths. And to be clear, there are hazards just standing up to government. As a matter of fact, to be honest with you, you're probably more in hazard's way when you really do the right thing. In other words, when you take on government with First Amendment petitions, that is, you know, really more of a punch in government's face than you checking out and saying, I'm not going to pay taxes and I'm not going to have anything to do with you anymore. I'm moving myself to become, you know, my own nation. I'm my own citizen and I'm a sovereign and I'm just an inhabitant here. Leave me alone. I believe that, you know, those are your decisions to make. I would never recommend that to anybody. Just due to the fact that, you know, maybe I'm self-serving. Maybe I look at this as, you know, if you have the potential of being able to serve in public office and lead, then, you know, you going down that path, you can't do those things. I mean, an inhabitant can't be a public servant. An inhabitant doesn't pay taxes, but you can't vote either. So the benefits, when you look at it, the benefits really come, you know, because of either really dire straits or dire circumstances that you have no choice. And we'll kind of talk about that when we come back from the break, because there's plenty of people that get into circumstances where they really do need to go down that sovereign citizen. And if you do, then again, there's consequences, but that doesn't mean you can't help. And this is what's really refreshing, but we'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so in talking, because I've talked to a few people now so far, and in talking with these people that have gone down sovereign citizen movement, there's some commonalities with all of them. First off, they all think that the 14th Amendment is this really bad thing, that they believed this, you know, this cycling, and I think this comes from Anna von Ritz too, that the 14th Amendment is an abomination when actually it's not at all. But there's this misinformation that a lot of people are receiving that, you know, these are used as marketing strategies to get you to buy into what they're selling. Some of the things that we discussed last night are things that, you know, this Jural Assembly, because I kind of covered this 2 weeks ago, and I brought this up, and I said, when you look at this Jural Assembly law, and when you look at some organizations that are telling you that the people can call a common law grand jury, those rights were inherent in the monarchical form of government of Britain. They were not inherent. They were actually severed when the Constitution was established. When we declared independence, I mentioned this yesterday, all of these things that you had rights under the crown of Britain because he was a monarch, you didn't have a representative. I mean, there was this parliament, but parliament was just this, you know, this make, you know, this nice gesture that the king made in allowing people to have some representation and some say, because it was only Britain. Because if you look at the empire Britain had, the only people that were afforded these privileges were the Englishmen. Now, under the guise of the colonies, when England created these colonies, the people coming here were under the impression that they were going to maintain their Englishman status and their citizenship and everything else and their rights. And come to find out, over time, those rights were being stripped from them. And it was Otis somebody in the 1850s or 60s or 1750s or 60s that started waking people up saying, you guys are Englishmen and you have these rights. And so under the monarchy, because you don't have a representative, the people had a right to assemble a common law grand jury. You know, and you went through the community and you pulled people together. And in those days, you know, it was not a complex society where everybody has their 9-to-5 jobs working for corporations. I mean, if you really think about it, the way we've gone with the corporate government alliance, you know, this has created this new world of enslavement. Because bottom line, you become a slave to a corporation and or a business. And under the paradigm, an incorrect paradigm, is that these companies are sovereigns when they're not. And we'll get into this probably more later. But bottom line, it's the state that's the sovereign in establishing businesses. And so technically, I honestly think that that needs to be pulled back to the county. Because, I mean, it may be an appropriate business within the state in one area, but it may not be appropriate for another area because counties are disparate. And counties, you know, one part of the county in one state would have completely different requirements and different needs. And to actually enforce or to, you know, basically say that these are the things that we will, you know, give you or allow them to, I don't want to say compel, but bottom line, you know, these become the businesses that can proliferate and these can't. That shouldn't be done at the state level. That needs to be done at the county level where the county actually has the say over, you know, what businesses can be established and, you know, services and so forth. Because the state as a general government, just like the federal government, they can start playing favors. And all of a sudden, the people that are going to be paving your roads in your county may be somebody that's, you know, really close to the old Capitol building. And this is how they play what we call the spoil system, where they, you know, start rewarding those who are, you know, filling the coffers with their contributions so that they can get, you know, an advantage at business. The states should not be able, and governments should not be creating advantages. They should be making sure that all businesses have equal opportunity and equal access to compete. And so, bottom line, there are a lot of different paths you can go by. And so you have to make the best decision for yourself. Now, in some cases, you might be in such a situation where, you know, your whole world and your whole life has been upended because, you know, your life partner, your soulmate has all of a sudden done a 360 or a 360 and then another 180 and gone, you really, you know, bonkos. And next thing you know, this person is taking you to court and just, I mean, having you arrested. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can be done, especially now with the, I'll just call it the administrative state, where they step in and they seize control of the entire family, your children and everything, and they make the decisions for you. Instead of actually going to a local common law court and letting, you know, the local people, and this is all being driven at the federal level, but nevertheless, there are people that find themselves in such dire straits that, you know, for them to survive, you know, they would actually have to just run away from everything, and that's not right. Some of the things that the oppression of the administrative state or this corporate state or whatever you want to call this illegitimate form of government. We have a legitimate government, but much of the stuff that they're doing is illegitimate. It's all the color of law. And so when they become so oppressive, I can honestly see that a person has a not only a right, the opportunity, and if it's the best thing for your circumstances, this is what you have to choose. Again, there are consequences to going down this path. There are consequences to divorce. There are consequences of surrendering your citizenship. There are consequences of, abandoning or, you know, leaving the family. Whatever these different things in life's choices you do, there are always consequences. And so don't make light of these types of decisions, because they're very big and important. And the reason I want to say this is because I would never, you know, give you the endorsement to say that's what you should do. But if you believe it's best for you, then it's not my position to judge. But to go around and sell to people and to get them to come and do this so that you can help sell them the process and they help you and get paid to do these types of things, and then to become a part of, you know, these assemblies or what have you, that's not something that somebody's doing that's really trying to help you. That's creating relevance for their organization. And I look at organizations just like we, you know, they can become insidious just like these global corporations, because their focus is maintaining organizational relevance and growing the organization instead of really solving problems. And what the individual is trying to do is they're trying to solve the problem the best way they can. So I can't fault people for going down these different paths. But there are some organizations that are, I think, even more dangerous than a sovereign citizen. And these organizations are the ones that actually don't necessarily sever themselves as citizens and then start declaring that they've created their county as a sovereign county, when that's not representative of the county. And actually, this is a classic shadow government. Going down and creating these common law grand juries. And maybe you have 20% of the county. Maybe you've got that big a number. It's still only 20% of the county. If you don't flip the entire county, or at least the majority of the county, to going on board with this, because at that level, it is a democracy. It's a representative democracy. You choose your county commissioners. Your county commissioners say, we're going to go down this path, and that's how you do it. You can't do it in a bubble and say, we're going to create a common law grand jury without using your representation, because we are to have a representative government. We're to have a government based on the rule of law. And the rule of law is that you will have representation, and representation will be the ones that make those decisions when it comes to common law grand juries. So this is important. because under the American common law, the Constitution cannot be touched. Under British common law, there are things that the king can be touched. The thing that the king's laws can be questioned and overturned. The Constitution cannot. So to be clear, in a Republican form of government where the law is king, or actually the law that's king is the U.S. Constitution, all laws that are not in pursuant to that are not laws. They're the color of law. And they've passed these things and they've been enforcing these things for so long that everybody has basically gotten themselves into the box. It's like, you know, boxing up the pig out in the wild. For those people who don't know that metaphor, you know, to how to catch a wild pig is you start putting food in the forest. And then as the pig, you know, eats from that little bowl or wherever you're putting that food, you put a little wall right next to that. And the pig will come up and go, well, that wall's not a threat to me. So they start eating and they'll eat out of that bowl. A couple feedings later, you put another wall next to it. So you create a corner. And the pig will keep on eating because they don't see the threat. And then after a little while, you put a third wall up, so you kind of have this U shape where the pig will come and eat and not see a threat. Ultimately, when you got that pig eating out of that with the three walls, you put a little device on it with a fourth wall that's like a little trap door. And when they come eat out of that because they don't see the threat, boom, that door will fall, and now you've trapped your pig. And now you can eat the pig, or whatever it is why you trap the pig. But that's how you trap a pig. But anyway, we'll be right back after this promo.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so why was GR talking about pigs and trapping them? Everybody knows that. Or, you know, what's the significance? Over time, the government will do something. When they created the Department of Home, the justification was, well, we only need to do this to, you know, maintain and manage all of these territories. Well, they established and were able to go out and survey and pretty much create the territory and territorial governments from the East Coast to the West Coast. In other words, the continental United States was done in 1849. There was just a small strip of land, I think, in Arizona and maybe New Mexico. There's just teeny strips with Mexico that hadn't been established or settled. But for the most part, we were done. Why all of a sudden, when it's time to start sunsetting this concept of federal control over territories, did they want to create a permanent department? Well, okay, this is 1849. Well, they've had territories and expanse as a part of this government operation for 60 years. And all of a sudden, some people wised up and said, hey, look, you know, we've had this job for 20 years or what have you. And, you know, it could go away because now that the states have all formed, there could be an argument to say we got to get rid of this. So let's justify this and let's start expanding our role. So they justified it to help control the Indian Wars and all those other things. And they also started taking state land from them. And that's where they used this to usurp state power and state authority and take the riches or the wealth of the state. Because one of the greatest wealths the state has is its resources, its land itself. And so, because to be clear, they don't have any enumerated power or enumerated properties within a state other than those things that are enumerated, such as forts, magazines, shipyards, and so forth. That's it. So when it comes to shipyards, most people think, well, you know, they can, it's a naval port. It's a military installation, not, you know, a port of commerce. So, you know, we now have Navy bases, and then you have your commercial ports where commercial ships go in. You don't find commercial ships going into a Navy base. You know, that's only submarines or what have you. Anyway, so historically, they have done things like that. And I'll give you another case in point, because we have just put it up, and I believe, let me make sure, because I want to say we got this thing up already. I created the constitutional argument against the digital currency movement, because there's many states that are doing this. And so on the Take Action page, did I put it up there? I think I did. Greetings. The argument for constitutional compliance with the Republic Review Committee Conference of Positions for Federal and State, I have not put it up there. And so it's done. I need to actually get it up. I need to get this up and posted so that you can see this, because this is the groundwork for the next petition to actually demand, starting with your county commissioners and going through your state legislatures, if they've already passed a bill or if they're considering a bill, to say that this is unconstitutional. You can't do this. Even though the federal government is telling you it's a direct violation of the Constitution. And the reason we're in this situation, because to be clear, Article 1, Section 10 prohibits the states from being able to declare anything other than gold and silver coin to be the legal tender for the payment of debt. Well, we're now in the electronic, not full digital currency, but we do have electronic money. It can be converted to physical money. And they say, well, that's okay, because it still can be converted. When they go into this new digital currency, this is when they take us cashless. In other words, there will be no more association to gold and silver coin. They can say, oh, well, yeah, it's the same thing. No, it's not. Because that gold and silver coin that you may be able to buy, you will not be able to use it. The only allowed legal tender will be using this currency. This is the global cashless society scheme. And this will quickly fail, and we will fall into the clutches of the global government. Oh, well, that's because it'll be an emergency, and Congress will say we have to do this. And everybody that is in place when this happens, I am telling you that everybody that's there will be there for a purpose to do this. In other words, all of those seats will be filled in Congress, and they'll have possibly enough state legislators in place at the states to allow these things to happen. Folks, I want you to understand why it is so important that we hold and control the states, and why all elections must be made local. Because right now, the money that's coming in that is actually controlling, and I'll say, these god makers that are putting these little petty tyrants in your state and county, they don't know what they're doing, and they're doing what they're told. They're monkeys dancing to the organ grinder, and they all need to be replaced by people who understand the Constitution and will actually serve as a public servant in supporting that Constitution. So we have to actually start. There's a lot of things that you have to start doing. You have to start getting people ready. Now, going back to what I started talking about at the beginning of this show, you know, if you're a sovereign citizen, and it just absolutely warms my heart to see some of these sovereign citizens actually getting involved in this process. Because you can't get involved. You just can't vote. You can't do certain things. You can't sign the petition. But you can help gather the petitions. You just can't even testify to, you know, verify. You know, in other words, there's some limitations that you'll be able to do to help. But I understand why you went down that road. And, you know, if it is the only way that you can save yourself and serve yourself, I understand. I do believe that, you know, anybody that goes down that path will realize, you know, down the road that it's hard. And as a matter of fact, what we need to do is we may need to come up with a way of kind of finding some of these people their path back. Because that's kind of something we talked about, and I've mentioned this before. I said, you know, if you are a sovereign citizen, you're an inhabitant living here, and you want to obtain your liberty, or you want to obtain the civil rights under the Constitution once again, and become a citizen, you know, you may have to pay some back taxes. As a matter of fact, you know, it may be too onerous to have to pay for 20 years, but it may be reasonable to say, look, you haven't paid taxes for this many years, and the IRS goes back 7 years, so it may be reasonable. You know, actually, the IRS needs to be abolished, and the amount of taxes and so forth need to be dealt with as well. I think once we turn this corner and we realize that, you know, because I'll tell people, you know, if you count all of the money that they take from taxes that is illegitimate, it's like, you know, that money is just, you're not making that. You shouldn't even report that as income, because that's just felonious income, because the government has no authority to taking that, to compel you to pay that. The only legitimate taxation you have is for the portions of government that is actually legitimate. So much of the money that they're taking from you is not actually legitimate money. So for those people that are paying an honest tithe, if you're paying, you know, a tithe on your full gross earnings, then, you know, that's very liberal. I try to help people, because I've had people ask me, I want to pay an honest tithe, and I pay a full 10% on my income. And I say, well, you know, it's hard to determine what your real income is, because the government has created these tax, this level of tax, that it's a sham. The way the corporations have worked in creating extra money, even though it's coming off of your work, it's illegitimate. So it's a part of your compensation, though, but it's illegitimate. So however you work that out, it really comes down to this. It's between you and the Lord. It's always between you and the Lord. You get to make those decisions. Ultimately, the decision is yours. So I just advise people that, you know, that it's between you and the Lord, but you can start deducting a good percentage of what you pay in taxes. But to come up with an exact number, you'd actually have to go through the outlays to say, okay, out of the outlays, what should I have to pay for? Because we shouldn't be paying for this debt. We shouldn't be paying for the interest on the debt, because the debt wouldn't exist if they weren't spending recklessly. So back to this pig and trapping of the pig, I'll give you a good example. When FDR seized and took us off the gold standard, and basically started printing money, inflating our currency, which actually exacerbated the depression and made things worse. He did this as an executive order that was actually built upon, let me see here, I've got it right here. What was it? The Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917. So in other words, Wilson came along and got Congress to pass this act, and then FDR used an EO based upon that act to seize private gold and took it from people and didn't give them any just compensation or anything. Because bottom line, when they, if they seize your property, they have to give you just compensation, and they did not. He just claimed that, and he took that. This is why many people, you know, hid some of their gold, and some people went to jail for it because they violated an unconstitutional law. And he was a tyrant enough to actually throw people in jail. Oh, by the way, I don't know if how many of you may know this, but as we're going into break, I'll just share this with you. If you understand the eagle and the logo of the Philadelphia Eagles, because they were just in the Super Bowl, do the history on that. The Philadelphia Eagle is based on the eagle that was used as a symbol of government compliance that businesses had to put up. Go do the research on this. This is all comes back from FDR's era of the eagle, and because businesses that were compliant with federal law put an eagle up so you knew you were doing something good. Anyway, I'll be right back.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so there's a really good book, and I got this out of Liberal Fascism, or it was a book by, I believe, Jonah Goldberg, and it's a red book with a yellow smiley face, and it was about fascism in America. And it started off with the early 19th century, or 1900s, the 20th century, and covered, you know, fascism in the last century. And it was a good expose on how America had actually been so fascist. And during FDR's reign, when they seized, because I'm telling you, FDR did something very similar, or actually say Nixon did something very similar to what FDR did. If you remember when Nixon tried to put a price gap or a price freeze on wages and products and pricing and all of that, I mean, Congress actually gave Nixon, because they were looking at this, and this is when Nixon basically took us completely off the gold standard. He unleashed the ability for the Fed to start printing money. And that's when things really started going haywire. That's when, you know, the final, because again, when you actually look at how things go along, it's like when Jimmy Carter created the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act, you know, it didn't do anything. It was just sitting there. And then all of a sudden, this guy by the name of Bill Clinton comes along, and he actually goes straight into this act, and he says, we're going to use this act to actually start pumping money into these, you know, affected economic areas. In other words, into the poor neighborhoods where banks were now being punished if they weren't giving away money to, you know, blacks or minorities and people that didn't have money. And so the Community Reinvestment Act got everybody into this game that, you know, as a matter of fact, I remember, I think it was a Thomas Woods, or maybe it was Gutzman, I think Kevin Gutzman, that may have wrote about this, where, you know, these bankers were literally saying you could be a cow and get a mortgage today because the Community Reinvestment Act has basically brought down the barriers that anybody could get a loan. and it put banks at risk. And what it did was it created this huge housing bubble, which ended up bursting in 2006-2007 timeframe. And so all of these things, these manipulations, they were done to people go, well, what happened? Because in 2006, people didn't understand what was going on, why all of a sudden everything just collapsed. Well, it all started with Jimmy Carter. And in this particular case on gold and our monetary system, it all started with Woodrow Wilson. Maybe it all started, every single president that has been a part of the global progressive movement has contributed to very key places, acts, and things in making sure that down the road that these things would be picked up and exploited against us. It sounds like a conspiracy theory. Sounds like somebody knows what they're doing. Yes, there's no doubt in my mind, folks, that somebody does know what they're doing, and that somebody has brought down societies over the annals of mankind. And so we have, you know, we have all this hardcore evidence that actually proves that we are in a situation that has all been concocted and made up. And as I tell people, it is a house of cards. It's a castle of cards, to be honest. It's this huge monstrosity that's illegitimate. So when I speak to and I talk with all these people that are, you know, running around saying, you know, this government is, you know, illegitimate, well, that means that they're accepting it as a legitimate government. And it's not. It really is illegitimate. They're correct, but they think that it's all gone. It's not. All of those things can be undone. And the entity that has the authority to undo those things are the states. And that can't happen until we get enough states to commit to doing what needs to be done. It's like getting, you know, you may have one parent ready to commit to doing it, but you need both parents to really, you know, effectively change the behavior of the child. Because the child will play games. They'll behave one way with one parent, they'll behave another way with another, or with the other. In this particular case, we have 50 parents and one child. And so we don't necessarily need all 50, we just need a majority. And there are ways of controlling this. And this is where we go into Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and so forth. What's really important that I'm trying to help you understand is that you have choices, but the choices that you make have consequences. And what's really important, and this really comes down to this, because I don't care what you call your organization, I'm just telling you, you got to do it now. You got to get organized. I will tell you that the appropriate name would be the militia, the unregulated or unorganized militia, whatever. You are not a organized militia that is trained with deadly force or trying to apply deadly force. What is the constitutional responsibility for every U.S. citizen is to actually serve to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States when called upon. And if our government is not doing that, then we have our first recourse. The first weapon that we should pick up is the Constitution itself. Because the petition for the petitioning government for the redress of grievances is the most powerful weapon we have at our disposal. And it actually serves us in many ways, because when you read a petition calling out government for violating this part of the Constitution, that in itself becomes a lesson for everybody to read. I didn't know that that was a violation. I didn't know the Department of Transportation was unconstitutional. I didn't know that our partnership or our being a part of the UN was unconstitutional. It's a direct violation according to this. That's how people learn. Now, let me at the risk of possibly offending, you know, I know that there's different names. And then sometimes, you know, we want to kind of start and evolve because you may have resistance with people using the word militia. I get it. You may have people that, you know, go down the path of political correctness. And in this particular case, it doesn't have anything to do with your salvation. As long as you're getting everything working forward, you can be successful. Calling it the, you know, your county constitutionals, whatever you want to call it. But ultimately, the real name of this, when you actually, your exit criteria is establishing the militia, both the active and the inactive reserve. In other words, every citizen, because if you're a citizen, you are accountable. And I believe that every citizen should actually be, you know, we can't coerce you. We can't force you to vote. We can't make you register, but we can make you register as a militia member, as an inactive reserve, and make sure that you have fundamental training and then participate in the jural process of holding government accountable or these other things. Because when we look at who or is it in the community, it should be every citizen that should be called to evaluate the media. Is the media slanted? Are they yellow journalists? Or are they giving you objective journalism to give you all the information necessary so you can see for yourself what's happening? We have the ability to regulate the press, in other words, and we talk about this all the time. There are other things, just like healthcare, infrastructure, those types of things that we need citizen committees to actually go and, you know, evaluate the road system, the infrastructure, communications, all of these types of things, so that we make sure that everybody has a reasonable way of communicating and have access to these types of things. That it, because when it comes down to it, when it comes to communications, that 9 times out of 10 is a monopoly. The internet, your internet provider, how many true internet providers do you have at your house? It's probably only maybe 1 or 2. You either have a wireless way of going down the internet or you have a wired way of going down the internet. And so why do people go down wired? Because, oh, well, wired, you can get, you know, unlimited data. In some cases, you have to pay for it. Like with Comcast. Comcast, I know, makes you pay. I remember Fios, they didn't. It didn't matter how much you used, you know, you could get as much as you wanted. But those people that were trapped in that service, you know, that's all they had. You don't have competition on your electricity or your water. These actually, we have to be honest and say, why are these not public utilities? And why is these utilities not being at least overseen by the county? Because they are important. So this is right there on the Constitutional County's diagram on a Take Action page. It's the very first document. Check it out. Folks, we need your help. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And again, we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.